Getting It Done These Days for USA Today. Find his work in your nearest hotel lobby or online at usatoday.com. Become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. You may have presumed we're welcoming in George Schroeder. George, how are you today, sir?
Life is good. How are you?
Awesome. Glad to hear. So you don't do an op-ed or really an opinion piece. You do the podcast, I know, during football season. You're not what I would call an antagonistic member of the media. You're like an actual journalist. But
well, I can be if you need me to be. We write Dan Wolk and I write columns, but you know, it's not the job description of what I had at the Register Guard. You're exactly right. We are reporters.
No, the reason I ask is because in the feedback you've received over the years, you know, in this era of social media, it can get pretty nasty and get in the gutter. I'm kind of curious, do you recall hearing from people going after you with, like, maybe an unnecessarily nasty tone?
Well, sure, but, you know, that just comes with the territory. You know, not so much. Most people are pretty civil, but every so often somebody will come after you, and you're like, I'm not even really sure exactly what I did, but why it deserves this sort of level of vitriol. And then sometimes you know exactly why there's that level of vitriol, but you don't think it probably should be there. You know, it's just kind of, it just comes with the territory, though.
All right. No, I was kind of curious because what you put out there is usually more informative. If you take a stand, it's usually backed up by substantial facts. Whereas
I always thought so.
Well, as you well know, there are people out there in your field, do what I do, that put stuff out there primarily to antagonize and to get clicks,
sure,
and views and stuff like that.
That's right.
All right. So I saw on Twitter you decided that Smiley Kaufman deserved the Jim Nantz Necktie Award at the at the Masters. So I'm curious as to how much of the Sunday round you caught, and when a young Mr. Spieth kind of came unglued, did you find yourself intrigued or empathetic, maybe?
I would say empathetic and sympathetic. I mean, you know, it's just, on the one hand, I certainly can't really understand what he's going through because I don't play golf at a high level. But we've all sort of maybe been somewhere where something just sort of fell apart. And when you're really close to thinking you were going to achieve something really special, and it just, you know, I mean, and you hate it. You sort of cringe in the moment. I think
right.
That's where I was for him. I was cringing for him because it was so astonishing because of how put together he had been right up until that moment, and then it was just like, where did this come from? But that's golf, I think, you know, and that's golf at a high level.
No, I agree. I think sometimes when you have someone who seems to have that ice water, or it would be like somebody you would expect to be, it would be like if Greg Norman parred in on the back nine at Augusta and won. It's just when athletes step out of character, it kind of throws us for a bit of a loop because we go on track record a lot. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, well, there's no question. And look, there are certainly some guys that you would think to yourself, okay, I can see this guy coming apart. But based on Jordan Spieth, it's a short track record, but what we
right.
know of him, and then what we knew of him even in the tournament, was just sailing along. For it to just go so horribly wrong right when it did, and as badly as it did, is just an amazing thing.
All right, so this week, a big story. The NCAA bans the satellite camps. You tweeted out a story by a colleague of yours, Paul Meyerberg. USA Today had a story a year ago. It involved Jim Harbaugh. But even though the major conferences outside of the Big Ten voted them gone, it seems the SEC was kind of united, maybe, and more instrumental in pushing for this. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, they're the ones that those guys and the ACC jumped on board, too, were the sort of the people that proposed the thing. But, you know, when 6 out of the 10 FBS conferences vote for the ban, it's hard to pin it, you know, directly on the SEC. But it is essentially that the SEC coaches got really upset about the fact that Jim Harbaugh was, you know, in their mind, sort of coming in and playing in their backyard. I mean, frankly, I didn't think that what he was doing was all that effective in anything other than building the Michigan brand. It wasn't like he was going to get, you know, a kid out of Prattville, Alabama that Gus Malzahn or Nick Saban wanted. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear the SEC coaches were the ones that were behind the ban or were really wanting the ban, and they got it done. Now, I actually don't think it hurts Michigan. You know what? I don't know that it hurts Oregon. Although I do know that Oregon has used those satellite camps, and a lot of the Pac-12 teams that aren't in Southern California have used those satellite camps as an easy way to see a lot of prospects. You know what hurts? It hurts Utah State. It hurts Eastern Washington to go down to the FCS level. It hurts Middle Tennessee. It hurts schools like that. Now, it also hurts some teams like some schools like Washington State out of the Power Five, but it mostly hurts the Group of Five schools who can catch those guys who might be sleepers.
Yeah.
And in my mind, that's who it hurts. You're not really hurting Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. You're hurting the schools from the lower levels, and you're hurting the athletes who might get a shot at a better place to go and get discovered. That's who you're hurting. So I am dead against this ban.
Yeah, I think I mentioned Paul Meyerberg. He talked about what the true detriment here was. And to tell you the truth, a little pressed for time, I didn't read the entirety of his article. But he referred to the under-recruited, or maybe for young guys unable to travel far distances. That's where the true pain may lie.
Well, no question. I mean, okay, so even at the Power Five level, there's some under-recruited guys who maybe, you know, maybe they could end up in Oregon or Oregon State, but they don't have the money to get to Oregon, Oregon State from SoCal, let's say, right?
Right.
We'll just stick to kind of local. Or they can't get to, if they're an FCS size, you know, recruit, they can't get to Eastern Washington to be seen. Well, so how are you going to get seen by those guys and evaluated if you don't have the money to go to camp? You know, and by the way, that's not, we all like, oh, anybody can find the money to go to camp. Well, maybe you can't find the money to go to camp, and you may feel like you need to go to two or three of them if you're one of those guys in that position, in sort of the under-recruited position. Now, there's a whole lot of good kids that go to those camps, those satellite camps, you know, if it's set up in L.A., who probably aren't going to go anywhere. But there's always two or three kind of interesting, fun stories about kids who get discovered. And again, like I said, it's not always at the high major Oregon level. Sometimes it's at the Washington State level. Sometimes it's Utah State level. Sometimes it's at the Eastern Washington level. But it's a good story each time.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. This might sound simple, but every rule has a trigger. If Jim Harbaugh is still coaching the 49ers and no other high-profile coach is not only hosting these camps, but doing so kind of loud, you think it's possible we might not be having this conversation?
Without question, because they were going on before he was doing them. Oklahoma State, for example, has been doing a camp in conjunction with Mary Hardin Baylor, which is not Baylor. It's a different school in Temple, Texas, or Belton. I think it's in Belton, Texas. Anyway, somewhere along I-35. they've been doing that for 5 or 10 years now. And other schools have been doing the same. And nobody's cared. Nobody cared at all until Jim Harbaugh kind of went through on the, you know, the hey, look, we're here, Wonder Blitz tour, and everybody got all upset. And I don't think they should have, frankly. But, yes, if he's still with the 49ers or for some reason doesn't do that tour, this ban does not happen.
Oh, interesting. I was not aware of some of those facts. All right, this is one of those questions that really has nothing to do with the NBA, even though it's Kobe Bryant. Some guys just are known everywhere outside their sport. So this question is simple. 12 to 15 years from now, a teenager or a young person who either didn't see him at all or barely saw him asks you, what do you remember? What could you tell me about this Kobe Bryant guy? What would your response be?
Who are you talking to?
No,
I'm kidding. Look, I'm a guy who has grudgingly come around to Kobe's greatness, and the reason is because when he came into the league, sort of these predictions of greatness, you know, we were sort of still in the Jordan is the best of all time mode, and I'm still going to say that. Maybe that's a generational thing, but I've come around grudgingly, and I will tell him he's one of the top five players of all time. I don't know where you rank him. I don't know where he would be within that, but that's where I think he is. And I realize what rare air that is. I mean, the dude won so many rings, and I know he won the first couple with Shaq on the team, and maybe Shaq was the more important player. But he won some without Shaq, too, when it was clear he was the guy. You know, and for whatever reason, Kobe, I think, you either love him or you don't love him. But when Michael Jordan would take a lot of shots or maybe ill-advised, I don't think he quite got the kind of got the criticism that I think Kobe got.
No, I think it would be accurate to say Kobe's got that Dallas Cowboys, Alabama Yankee thing about him. You're not going to get a lot of neutral opinions.
Maybe there were people who hated Jordan. I don't know. I mean, and I'm not talking, you know, obviously if you're a fan of the other team, you hated him. You're just sort of general fans. Maybe there were fans who hated Jordan, but I didn't get that. Maybe they were there because, but I didn't get it because I lived in the we love Jordan bubble. I don't know. But I get the feeling that Kobe, for whatever reason, has been a lot more polarizing than Michael was.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. As a lifelong Knicks fan, if anybody was going to hate Jordan, it's me, and I don't. So,
yeah, but you're sort of a strange bird, as far as that goes, in many ways. But no, I'm kidding.
Nice. All right. Final thought. USC has a new athletic director. He's Lynn Swann. So we've gone from Mike Garrett, a player, Pat Hayden, a player, now Swanee, who became a broadcaster, then made a failed run for governor of Pennsylvania. Now he's the Trojan AD. I like what you said on Twitter. You just typed, "Wow." So what about this interesting hire makes you say, wow?
Well, it's so outside the box that it's almost just like, well, there you go, USC. You're doing something odd. You know, he's got no track record. To go back to track record, we were talking about that with Jordan.
Yep.
I mean, there's no real track record here. I mean, you know, at some point, is it okay to go get a guy? Look, he may be great, but I kind of thought they might go get an administrator, someone who could run, who has, you know, experience running a department, an athletic department. I think in the 21st century, that's more important than ever. You know, I think Pat Kilkenny did a fine job running the Oregon department, the athletic department. But when he left, they went out and they got a seasoned veteran of running things behind the scenes, moving up the ranks, becoming a senior associate AD and a deputy executive, blah, 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 in Rob Mullins, who, as it turns out, is exactly what you need in terms of running an athletic department, and he's done a really good job there. And I think, and I'm not equating Lynn Swann to Pat Kilkenny, because I don't know that Lynn Swann has Pat's business acumen at all.
Sure.
I don't know. I just think it's such an unknown. It's such a wild card thing that I'm just going to reserve judgment, I think. But that was sort of, it was so out of the blue. That's why the wow came with the tweet.
Well, it makes sense, and I like those very interesting comparisons. Way to play to your audience here in
That's
Eugene.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Well, well played. Good stuff,
yeah,
as always.
I'm going to go get on the Tuscaloosa station now and talk about the Alabama play director when I do that.
All right.
Deal with that topic. No, I'm kidding.
I see how you do it. Do you carry index cards?
Listen, whenever you call, I know that it's Eugene because you have such a distinctive voice. It's not a Northwest voice, but it's a distinctive Steve Tannen voice.
Nice.
I'm good.
Nice.
No, listen, you know, I mean, I don't claim to know a lot, but one of the neat things was becoming fairly familiar with the Oregon scene. And so I've had a chance to see how they did it in different ways and how it was good for them with Pat, and it was good for them. You know, after Mike Bellotti left, it was good for them when they hired Rob, and they're completely different. They're completely other, and it's outside the box as Pat was, and he was outside the box. It's to me, he looks traditional compared to hiring Lynn Swann at this point.
Oh, no question. And you're preaching to the choir. We happen to be huge fans of Rob. All right, George, I think we covered many things as always. Well played. Always our pleasure to have you. You enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll catch up with you next Wednesday.
Hey, I look forward to it. Thanks, man.
Take it easy.